And another foul on Ward. His third for setting a screen.
He's such a physical play, although George Taylor just got caught with a moving screen.
Pick and roll. And a foul. Offensive foul coming up. Dan Valentine standing right there. So
Pizzo's dying for a moving screen.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the February 18 edition of the Moving Screen Podcast. I'm Brendan Quinn with The Athletic. I'm here with Dylan Burkhart of umhoops.com, who's grinning like a son of a bitch. Why are you laughing so hard over there?
Because you're sitting in a closet.
I'm in a hallway. Full disclosure, I'm sitting in a random hallway in the bowels of Breslin Center between Tom Izzo's noon press conference and 4 o'clock practice. And yeah, I mean, I might as well be in a closet. This is and it's also about 97 degrees back here. So I dressed warmly because this is the endless winter in Michigan. And so if the air goes dead over here, just assume, in a heap somewhere in the bottom of Breslin. Send help if you don't hear from me in 5 seconds.
The podcast has to go on. We got a lot to talk about. You got to watch 2 Big Ten games this weekend, and both featured a team scoring less than 20 points and a half. How does that just make you happy to cover Big Ten hoops?
Big Ten fever right there. It was hotter than this hallway. yeah, weird games. We're going to start with Michigan State this week. Obviously, big news out of East Lansing. Nick Ward with a hairline fracture in his left hand. That is his shooting hand. Tom Izzo addressed it a little bit this afternoon. I don't think there's any real clarity on how long this thing is going to actually play out. He suggested 3, 4, 5 weeks. I've had people tweeting me and emailing me and saying, oh, I've heard of 5 to 6 weeks for hairline fractures. I have no idea. I don't pretend to know. All I know is that they are anticipating to have him back at some point. I was interpreting that as by the end of the regular season. After today, I'm thinking maybe it's more likely in the postseason. So we'll see. I don't think there's anyone who pretends to know how long this thing's going to take, I think, is doing exactly that, pretending. The bigger conversation is right now, in the here and now, Michigan State is tied with Michigan atop the Big Ten standings and has to figure out a new rotation on the fly on February 18th. So your first blush, Dylan, what do you think?
A couple clarifying questions.
Okay,
He got surgery yesterday or today?
Sunday night, 8 o'clock, he had a surgical procedure on his left hand. Yes.
And if you were, I guess, one clarification on the injury timeline, mm-hmm. as far as NCAA tournament goes, mm-hmm. I would say it would probably make the most sense, even if there's not a chance that he'll be back, to say that he'll possibly be returning, considering how injuries are handled by the NCAA tournament. You think there's anything to that?
I don't think it's a foolish thing to say. I think there could be some validity to that. From my sense, just being around here today and talking to people, I got the sense that they honestly are not sure if, you know, in 3 weeks, if he says, wrap it up, I'm ready to go, you know, okay, he's not a guard, right? If you can get minutes out of him wrapping that hand up and him grabbing some rebounds and putting down some dunks, and maybe he can't hit that 18-footer or you know, struggle even more from the foul line.
And it is his shooting hand, right?
It is indeed his shooting hand, yes.
And the second Michigan State game is 3 weeks away,
correct,
essentially, right?
Correct.
So first blush is that is a big loss, and it's pretty crazy. Now we're talking about a Michigan State team that has lost 2 day one starters, mm-hmm. for probably at least a big chunk of the season. I think you have to look at it and say it lowers the ceiling quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But I also think you look at what Michigan State did in that second half and against Ohio State, and they have a lot of guys who are going to flat out defend, and it's still going to be hard to score against this team. I don't know. What's kind of the reaction being around the team yesterday and today?
I don't think anyone, it's not, I wouldn't say it's gloom and doom by any means. And they have, I mean, frankly, they've played well with Nick Ward not on the floor. So this is not, it's not losing Cassius Winston, right? Where at that point, I think everyone would agree, pack it up and get ready for next season. There's just no chance at a deep run in that instance. Michigan State is such a strange team in that it has now lost a second of its perceived top three players. But if you look at the analytics, also for a second time, the numbers say they were better without the guy on the floor. And now I'm not saying that Michigan State doesn't need Nick Ward. I'm not saying that Michigan State's a better team without Nick Ward or without Josh Langford. But strictly by the numbers, if you look at Big Ten play, they were scoring 1.11 points per possession with him on the off the floor and 1.06 with him on the floor. Defensively, they were allowing 0.97 points with him on the floor and allowing 0.87 with him off the floor. Like, the numbers don't lie sometimes, and it's not like Nick Ward is a volume minute guy who's out there playing 36 minutes. Like, you're basically talking an even split. You know, he plays probably around 20 minutes a game.
Yeah, this is a proud day for the podcast. You're out here quoting on-court, off-court Dude. Numbers that you looked up yourself. This is a big day.
You know, I'm all grown up.
This is a big day. I'm surprised. I had not actually looked those numbers up in my podcast prep. Apologies. But I think it's more about the threat that he provides if you're game planning against Michigan State. I don't know that, I think Xavier Tillman can sort of do the job, but I'm not sure you spend as much time trying to scheme directly around him. Does that make sense?
It does. And you could also make a case that those minutes or those points, what he demands defensively, right, has to be added to those numbers. Like, you know, he draws a double team every time he's out. Not every time, but a large portion of the minutes that he's out there, like you said, you know, teams have to start worrying about who's drawing what fouls and what may happen or what may not happen. You kind of just have to plan for a guy who is as efficient as anyone in the country. So the interesting thing about Ward is he has those games where he totally dominates, where he can win basically not by himself, but he can be by far the best player on the floor and by far the most productive player on the floor. And then he has games where he's just not. And, you know, you look at some specific matchups, like Nick Ward in your first round game of the NCAA tournament is a monster commodity to have because Radford or whatever team you're playing has never seen anything like him. And he can go out and score 28 in the first round of the NCAA tournament, right? And that's just a really big piece to have. And in the Big Ten tournament, playing day in and day out, I'm not sure how valuable he is playing 2-3 days in a row. So everything with him is kind of like this weird give and take. Enormously valuable. Maybe you can survive without him. And you can shift that conversation basically in whichever agenda you want to carry.
I think it comes down to two things. Depth, whereas I think Xavier Tillman can, and the bigs they have can do that. But what happens is Xavier Tillman gets two fouls. And then all of a sudden you're looking at maybe a dicier situation. Mm-hmm. And then what you said, I think that really stands out, is he's a guy who has the potential to be the best player on the floor at any given time. And a lot of Michigan State's pieces now, other than Cassius Winston, are guys who can just be really good in their role and hope and make Cassius Winston look like the best player on the floor. So all the weight in the world right now is on number 5 at point guard.
Definitely. Like, part of the interesting thing about the number splits is when you look at him is if him not being out there means that those extra 20 minutes a game results in Marcus Bingham having to play 7 minutes, right? Like, now it's not equitable in any way, or the value of saying, you know, the minutes with him on and off the court before this, you can kind of throw them out because, okay, well, if you're asking Marcus Bingham to play extended time, if you're asking Thomas Kithier to do stuff he's never done, that's not, it doesn't really hold the weight. But
you're also, you're looking at a team where Winston, Goins, and McQuaid are all going to be playing like 40 minutes a night.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, there's not, they don't really have backups at this point.
Right.
And but you're talking about doing that for a month, not for the whole season. Right? Like, it's not like they've had to wear and tear those minutes all year, besides maybe Winston, but it'll be really, it's going to put a lot of pressure on some, and you have to kind of not break for those cracks, you know?
Izzo said today he doesn't have much intention of maybe playing Kenny at the five and going super small. It sounds like they're basically just going to go Xavier Tillman, Thomas Kithier behind him, Marcus Bingham in a pinch is basically my read on it today. Now, you know, things can go sideways or matchups can dictate other things, but it's pretty appropriate that for a team trying to figure this out, they now get a great test in Rutgers, because say what you will about Rutgers, but they have huge dudes on the front line. They just want to score at the rim. That's really what they do best. They want to attack the glass. They want to win the rebounding battle, win points in the paint, and just out tough you down there. And you know, they're going right into the fire in a game like this.
Yeah, and I can't see Rutgers scoring inside against the best 2-point defense in the country. I mean, that's, I don't think
Rutgers, Michigan State's always weird. It's always,
it is. Remember they
took them to overtime in East Lansing, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, it can get weird, but I still think it's almost a game like this, with all the distraction of Ward being out, kind of prevents looking ahead to Michigan on the weekend. Also, it's sort of going to be like a rally the troops sort of game.
I do agree with that. It eliminates the trap game element.
It's a rally the troops game at home is usually a good situation. And I don't see Rutgers really challenging that depth. Like, I don't think they can get to that point.
Right.
And as far as Kenny not playing the five, the problem really is he doesn't have a backup now, right? Because before, the option would be to go with Tillman and like a two big kind of look. But really, you're just losing that depth, I guess, in that position.
Yeah, I mean, you could. Here's the thing. Aaron Henry ideally would be able to give you minutes at the four. That is, he's kind of just an enigma at this point in terms of both his play and the minutes that he's getting. He played 9 minutes against Ohio State, but did very little, only a couple days after playing well at Wisconsin. I would probably, this stretch, so much of it goes to Kyle Arnes, because I think he can give you minutes as an emergency four and at least fill that role, and he will do everything that you ask of him, and he will go balls out for every minute, whether he's at the two, the three, the four, it doesn't matter. But he'll step in there and play minutes at the four when called upon and do at least an admirable job, and he won't be out of position, he won't make many mistakes, and maybe he bangs a couple threes. He's played well as long as his back holds up, which is a question. He's kind of a very quietly a hugely important player.
Yeah, and that gives them option to spread teams out a little more, like a team like Rutgers that has a sort of a traditional four
and run a little bit more spacing too. And getting out and running and stuff like that. Because he's a guy who not only can run the lanes, but can also, if the ball ends up in his hands, he can go, even more so than Kenny when he's at the four.
So overall, this injury, say it takes you to late in the regular season at a floor, what does that change for your expectations for Michigan State? Can they still win the regular season? Where do you see it all kind of play out?
When I look at the schedule, there's no games that I would have circled and said Nick Ward wins you this game. And I think I've proven to be I'm a big component or a proponent of Nick Ward. I've championed his minutes for years. But really, when it boils down to it, this is a team that wins with defense. It's a team that wins with timely shooting, and it's a team that wins with Cassius Winston. And I think losing Nick Ward doesn't eliminate any of those three things. So, would he be great to have once NCAA tournament time comes around? Absolutely. Does this diminish their chances at winning a Big Ten championship? I don't think so.
Interesting. He had not played very well against Michigan in the past,
which
third of their remaining schedule.
I mean, we're going to obviously, for the listeners out there, we will have an extensive show on Friday about the matchup. But for sure, when you look at the two Michigan games, which are by far the biggest matchups on the remaining schedule, not having Nick Ward out there is not the be-all, end-all. Other than him having a lot to prove, and maybe, you know, he was going to play over his head and absolutely just go guns blazing, which when those opportunities have come this year, he has answered it, right? The game in Columbus when it was, you know, he was very much in the bullseye, he answered the call, and he's done that a number of times this year. And maybe that would have been the case against Michigan. You can't, you know, it's totally hypothetical. You don't know. But just in terms of the straight matchup and what history says, you can get away with not playing Nick Ward because Michigan's going to put him in the high ball screen all day, and it's not a great matchup for him.
It's twofold. Either he gets Teske into foul trouble or Michigan just picks on him in the ball screen game and plays him off the court, which is kind of what happened last year. Now we might not know this year. We'll see. Anything else?
Very few undersized guys get Teske in foul trouble.
Yeah. I mean, Ward is good at drawing fouls.
Sure, but he's 6'8", and you can, you know, Teske, if he's going in that game saying, I'm only going to wall up, I think he's only going to wall up.
There's a far better chance that Nick Ward gets John Teske in foul trouble than Xavier Tillman, sure, in my opinion.
Sure.
Any other takeaways from – it's weird. We're talking all this doom and gloom, but it was a big week for Michigan State. They had the huge win on Tuesday and then pretty much suffocated Ohio State. That was a hell of a run down the stretch. I know you wrote about the wacky lineup that they played. Might be more of that coming up.
I think I don't know about that specific lineup, but yeah, I mean, there's going to be some lineups out there where you have to kind of – what's the best way to put it? There's going to be a lot of minutes you're looking to survive with the makeup of this team now, where you're going to put a lineup out there and say, let's get from the 16-minute mark to the 12-minute mark, and that's the goal without too much damage, right? That's a tough spot to be in. I'm not doom and gloom on this team. I really – you know, I feel like they were going to split with Michigan either way. And if a gun to my head right now, I still think the same. You know, depending on what the other teams do in the Big Ten and where, you know, conference championship conversation, that's a different deal. But I still think finishing out 4-1, 3-2 is 100% on the table. And, you know, from there on, what the other teams do is kind of out of their control. But let's put it this way. It would also be very on brand for a Tom Izzo team to get a share of the Big Ten championship with this kind of ragtag group that is going to end up finishing this season.
That's fair.
Am I wrong?
Can we agree now that Michigan and Michigan State should have played in the middle of January when they were both undefeated, it would have been a fantastic event, and now it's just not going to be the same. This is why you don't put the two games back-to-back. Let's... terrible.
In hindsight, I will agree with you. You were right. You were right. It would have been nice to see them both at full strength. But yeah, it didn't happen. But if he was healthy, I don't know, man. It would have still been pretty sweet.
It just would have been nice to see him in the first half of the year when they were still rocking and rolling and hadn't lost at Illinois and at Penn State.
Right. The annoying thing now is just going to be the fan narrative of everyone going back and forth and just everyone's getting muted is all I know. It's going to be, if Michigan State wins, it's only going to be, it'll just be trashing Michigan for how could you possibly lose to this version of the team when I actually think it's a pretty good version of the team. And then vice versa, it'll be, you only beat Michigan State because Ward was out and Langford was out. And I don't know if that's the case either.
And we'll at least have to play the game. But we are going to talk in depth about the Michigan-Michigan State game this weekend on a Friday pod. We're going to focus more in this pod on the games this week.
Yes.
Any other – are you calling a Rutgers cover on Wednesday? Is that what you're saying? Scarlet Knights keep it close? KenPom line is 19.
I would not say that. I mean, 19 is a lot. That's a lot. I like Michigan State by 13 to 15. I think it's a double-digit win. I think they do come out and are – very focused on the game plan and very focused on what each individual has to do. And they still have plenty of talent. And when you get into situations like this, you do find that having smart players that know what they're doing, you can win with execution. And the second half of the game against Ohio State, I thought, was a really good example of that. Every guy on the floor knew what he was doing. And it helped that Ohio State couldn't throw the ball in the ocean. But, they can get it done.
Michigan State's basically every guy on the court knows what he can do and should do and will do. There's not a lot of options to freelance when the should gets stopped.
Right.
Like, everything comes down to Winston to make a play. And you did see the Michigan State offense kind of bogged down a little bit in the half court. Ohio State, I thought, did a good job defensively, kind of stopping transition, taking them out of sets, but then they just couldn't score. And I think all of those guys who are still on the team basically are just locked in defensively. McQuaid played a ridiculous game defensively.
Yep.
And if he can do that and hit shots, like, that's a game changer on any night.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be such a big thing. Is, you know, this goes back to the previous conversations that we've had of, you know, what can you really rely on day in, day out on three-pointers from McQuaid, Kenny, Kyle Arnes, you know, guys. It's going to be a big ask for all three of those guys to be hitting night in and night out. Like, you know, there are role players for a reason. But that goes back to your point that so much is now on number five.
It's the middle of February, and the 1-4 pick and pop is the staple of the Michigan State offense, just like we all expected, right? I mean, credit to the development of his shot, but it's not what you would. I feel like a month ago people were kind of giving Kenny that open three, and now it's something that Michigan State goes to in the clutch, it seems like, every time.
What about that Michigan fan narrative that Michigan State doesn't develop players? Is that...
I think players develop players. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
I mean, Kenny Goins has plenty of development. I mean, this is a guy who, he was, what, 4 of 15 in his career on threes. Now he's hitting 36% in the Big Ten. That's pretty good.
Pretty good. All right, so we're hopping over to Michigan now.
Let's talk Michigan, yeah. We got some visitors over there. We're going into Michigan. Michigan had a big win over Maryland on Saturday afternoon. It was a pretty brutal first half. Michigan's defense locked down Maryland. Basically couldn't make a two-pointer in that half. And then Wolverines got out and ran a little bit in transition. I don't know if I would call their transition offense great, but Maryland's transition defense I think we can call bad.
It was better than non-existent, which it has been often this year.
Yeah, they did a lot of pointing and not a lot of running on the transition defense. Michigan's half-court offense, still kind of a mess. There are long stretches of that game where they just couldn't make open jumpers. Synergy had Michigan on 4 of 19 on catch-and-shoot jumpers. It's hard to win that way. Most teams can't win that way. I think Michigan sort of has made that a habit. It's just how long can you do that and how long is it sustainable? I don't know. Another game, Xavier Simpson, sort of MVP performance. He carried Michigan all the way down the stretch out of the ball screen. I don't know. I mean, this is what you expect from Michigan at home. I think the bigger story here is, can Michigan beat a good Big Ten team on the road? Because they haven't really yet, and they're going to have to down the stretch, I think, to win the league. Where are you at with Michigan?
Right now I'm going back and forth on any given day still not knowing like what the best option is, because even though Charles Matthews is playing well, like, I still don't know how much of the – if he's the best option on any given day, right, to have the ball in his hands. What do you think?
I think you look at the best option is to just give the ball to Xavier Simpson and let him find the open man, whoever that might be, and that kind of speaks to Michigan's – balance, but it also speaks to, I don't really trust anyone else on the floor to find the best option. Everyone else on the team is kind of looking for their offense. Simpson's really the only guy who can create for others and puts a lot of pressure on him. We kind of saw that crack at Penn State, but he was fantastic. 8 assists to 1 turnover on Saturday, and he can get everyone involved in the half court in a way that no one else really can.
What did you think of Teske shooting? Was that a random deal or what?
It was tough to watch. He missed a lot of those twos. I mean, I don't know that. I don't think he's going to shoot 1 of 7 every time out. Teams are going to guard Michigan that way because I think you would. Who else are you going to want to beat you, right? If you're a team like Maryland that plays sagged in defense, has two bigs, that shot's there. I probably would have. I'm surprised they didn't go more to Livers at the five because he can get that same shot. If they put him in at the five and pick and pop that. Right. They actually did that in the first half a little bit. I don't know. I mean, do you think John Teske should shoot 7 threes in a game?
No,
probably
not. I don't.
But he hit a big one finally, and I don't know who else do you want to shoot all those threes.
It's a fair counter.
it really speaks to a Michigan-wide problem. I don't think it's just Teske. There's games that they've won this year because he hit a bunch of threes. He looked off on his shot, though. It was like super flat. Does it seem like he wasn't quite getting enough lift or something, or do you just think it was a bad day shooting?
Yeah, I think he just didn't seem to have his legs underneath him, and whether it was because maybe they were running a little bit more or whether it was because he's banging with Bruno Fernando and just constantly battling for position, whatever it might be. Oh, and you know what? I mean, Jesus, they play 31 games or whatever. You can have a game where you miss a bunch of shots, and because that's just the way that's the nature of the game. Not everything needs a takeaway. So, but, you know, the Teske that I think showed himself earlier this year in, I'm trying to remember those games, like the Wisconsin game, the Northwestern game, where he was banging threes, like, I think it might have given some people a little bit of a false sense of, like, this is almost interchangeable with Mo Wagner. It's like, no, it's not that.
It's different.
He's a different guy. It's, like you said, I mean, under no circumstance do I think he should be taking 7 threes. And it's one of those, yeah, do you tell a guy, it's the same thing as Simpson. If he's wide open, do you tell him not to shoot it?
No.
I don't know, right. But, you know, do more and more, maybe the bigger question is here, do more and more teams just give him that shot?
Yeah, where do you look at, you can either say he's 29% on the year or he's 34% in Big Ten games, right? I mean, do you want to give a guy a shot that he's hitting at 34, 35%? Probably not. I mean, do you give Kenny a pick and pop? Like, that is sort of the same shot. They're probably similar percentages.
But, like, here's the thing. He's 13 for 18 or 13 for 38 in conference play. But he's 5 for 7 against Northwestern in the two games. Like, that 34% is not drawn out over the 15 games that they played in the league. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm defending Michigan right now, and if me giving John Teske that shot means I can help stop Xavier Simpson from driving into the middle of the defense, because that's still Michigan's best scenario, I'm going to let John Teske shoot as many threes as his heart desires. And if he bangs me for 4 out of 7, so be it.
That's fair. I mean, what it comes down to is that when Teske's on the floor, other big men can't score. And
sure,
that changes the game for Michigan. And I think they have to keep him at least a threat offensively because he can put pressure on the rim rolling. And yeah, if he struggles and can't make that shot and you're seeing a team just give him that shot over and over, I do think you'll see more Livers at the five, but I don't think Livers can guard a guy like Bruno for more than a minute or two, right?
Right.
It's interesting. I don't think you're going to see him getting 5, 6, 7 three-pointers in a game very often. I think it was sort of just a product of how Maryland plays more than anything.
The question is going to be whether, because I still think he's going to have those looks, the question is going to be whether he takes them or swings the ball and only takes it when he's really feeling comfortable or in rhythm or he gets his fingers on the seams, because a couple of those he just took and shot because he was almost so surprised to be that open.
Yeah, I don't think you'll hear Beilein saying they don't want him to shoot those. So no. I think in the same game played over, I think he wanted to take the same 7 shots.
Sure.
And it's not like there's shooters lining up on this team just knocking them down. So I don't know that it's that big of a can't just pick on him in that case.
No, I mean, but that was the stat that jumped out. It was a talking point out of that game was his shooting, and some people kind of losing their mind a little bit. But overall, I also think it was I think you tweeted this, and I agree with it, that it was kind of the quintessential Michigan game right now, right? They were brilliant for 5 minutes on offense, then disappeared, built a big lead, and then just hung on because their defense is just a vice when it wants to be.
And Xavier Simpson is really good at ball screen situations late in games. I think that is kind of goes – people don't mention that enough, just how good he is. He's one of the top, I think, five players in the country in terms of – five high major players in the country in terms of points created out of ball screens, which is just ludicrous for a kid who can't really shoot. Mm-hmm. But it's his passing out of those sort of looks. He's actually a really – his transition numbers, if you look on Synergy, are really bad. And his assist-to-turnover ratio is lower in transition, which really speaks to how ridiculous his assist numbers are when you consider most of them come in the half court, whereas it's a lot easier to rack up assists if you're playing in a full court game all the time. And maybe Michigan becomes a little too dependent on that at times. The offense kind of can stagnate and just turns into Simpson dribble around and make a play, but it's also probably the best option right now. Where are you at with sort of this Jordan Poole slump, and is there a way out of it? What do you make of it?
I think it's real. I am not a believer that there's going to be some massive turnaround here. I mean, I certainly think he could get going with a shot. But, like, I don't – let's put it this way. I don't just think it's cold shooting that is the issue right now.
What's the issue?
I don't think he's getting the looks that he needs to be getting. I don't know if he is, whether it's busting his ass when he's moving off the ball, whether it is putting in, running with an extra gear, or maybe it's just skill development that he's not quite there yet. I mean, he's just... What we saw earlier this year, I think, of the stuff that he did in the ball screen, I think was because it was completely unscouted. No one really expected it. No one quite thought through defending him. And now I think there's a very clear game plan on defending him. You know, if you get physical with him when the ball's in his hand, if you force him to go where he doesn't want to go, it can be a little bit of a black hole with the ball.
Yeah, if he shoots, he's shooting 31% from three in Big Ten games, and that includes a 5-for-5 game. So
yep.
He's been the first game of the year. He went five, or the Purdue game. He went 5-for-5, and he's been what 21 of 79 since.
It feels like it was 10 years ago.
If he shoots that poor, I mean, he was shooting 50% from three basically in November and December, and now he's down in probably below 30%. I mean, the ceiling for this team, I don't know that this team can make a deep run if he can't make some three-point shots, because there's no one else that can make those type of shots, and it just isn't there right now. And it's he's not a bad shooter. We've seen him make shots. It seems mental to me to a degree. His two-point numbers haven't fallen that much. He's getting to the basket, and when he does, he can still finish, but he just cannot make a jump shot right now. And I don't know. That's probably the biggest concern if you're Michigan, because we see, yeah, they can grind out these games, but how long can you do that? And at some point, some team is going to get hot and make a couple shots, and you have to be able to score.
You know, with the shot selection, like it also doesn't seem like there's that much catch and shoot with him. There seems like there's a lot of him with the ball in his hands and dribble, dribble, jab, step, blah, blah. You know, just these they're not great looks, and he's not James Harden. And if those are the looks that you're going to rely on, then you're going to get 1-for-8 against Penn State. You're going to get 3-for-10, 3-for-9, whatever it may be. You know, when he's kind of that free-flowing, catch-and-let-it-fly guy, that's, in my opinion, is when he's been at his best. You probably have the Synergy numbers in front of you. But
I'm pulling them up. I'm curious. Because what stands out to me is that in December, he was making a lot of those tough off the dribble, step back. Like those are shots that he was taking. That, like, his shot selection to me hasn't changed. I think he's taking the same shots he was earlier in the year. He's just missing both. Like I'm gonna pull up the catch and shoot versus let's see, shot type. So Jordan Poole on catch and shoot jumpers, is shooting, moment of truth here, 38%. And on off the dribble jumpers, he is shooting 37%. So basically the same percentage. I really feel like he's shot quality.
Are those in conference numbers too, or is that overall?
I would have to filter out to get conference, but that's on the whole season.
Okay.
But the point I'm trying to make is that what made him so good was his ability to make bad shots. Mm. And he's
that's
still
not a good reason. That's not a way of being good, though.
It is.
I don't know.
If a play breaks down, do you want him trying to get off a shot in the last 10 seconds or Charles Matthews?
I'd rather someone who's going and creating and not likely taking a fallaway jumper.
All right. That's the biggest question for Michigan is what happens come shot clock time. And how long, other than a Xavier Simpson hook shot, I don't know that there's a good option. And that's sort of the issue.
Well, that was a very Michigan sentence right there. Do you see a fix here?
Make shots. I think it's just simple. Like, I don't think it's something that you can really change so much as that. I mean, they've tried. You see them, they'll drop action out of timeouts, out of halftime to get him a look, and he's just been way off. It's just, like, his game is out of whack right now. I don't know how you fix it, to be honest.
You know, sometimes he takes those shots, and look, Jordan Poole likes to be pretty, right? And he likes to take the flashy-looking jump shot. He does, and it's what makes him a magnetic figure. It's what makes him the ballsy type guy who will take and make that shot against Houston. You know, it's part of who he is. But then there's sometimes it's just like, hey, man, set your feet, square your shoulders, and take a jump shot, right? Like, you can watch some of the shots he takes during warm-ups, and you're like, that's not a shot you will take at any point in this game.
Yeah, you might not want to tell him that because he might prove you wrong.
Well, this and 100%, that's who he is. And, I mean, that's why that personality and that demeanor is why, I mean, as a writer, I love covering him, and everyone likes talking to him because he's got this personality to him, and that's the way he plays. So you're right. Like, this is the tough spot for Beilein, where you don't want to stifle his creativity and his moxie by trying to put him in some box of you need to play this way, because who knows what the alternative is.
We might be seeing it right now. You got to find some kind of balance. I agree. And the key is to figure out that balance, I guess, by coming the next couple weeks. And, I mean, it could happen. He started the year like it just takes a few shots, and all mm-hmm. of a sudden he could be going crazy and making shots all over the floor. Like, you really don't know.
You're right. I mean, because who knows? Next weekend he could go 5 for 6 against Michigan State on CBS, and people are talking about him about like one of the best shooters in the country. Everyone just forgets about everything that's happened, and on he goes his merry way into March as, you know, kind of the all the swagger in the world, you know, ready to catch and shoot at all turns. And then, you know, then suddenly Michigan's rocking and rolling, right?
Mm-hmm. Offensively, and then all of a sudden he's a first round pick.
Yes.
There you go.
And that would be, this is the Beilein trajectory, by the way, of everything that has happened, where the one guy who can take off and suddenly become a draft pick or a lottery pick or something, that has happened in the past. So, all right, this week, I will be heading to Minnesota on Thursday morning for that game. We mentioned the trap game possibility with Michigan State kind of getting snuffed out by this Ward injury. Michigan, on the other hand, I think this game is definitely sitting there as a lose-lose. How about that, right? You get very little. Are they still a quad one? They're not a quad one win still, are they?
Minnesota on the road
on the road. That's a good point.
I would look at Minnesota and say it's more the trap, just because this is a game they probably, the kind of game they need to win to make the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of one of those all hands on deck late February home games that bubble teams win more often than not. They probably feel a little gypped after coming to Ann Arbor, playing really well, and then losing on a buzzer beater. Mm-hmm. But on the same token, maybe Michigan doesn't take them for granted because of that. I mean, Michigan just played awful in that game for the most part and still won it. It's an like the matchup is a little unique because they sort of excel in areas where the other team excels, right? Minnesota lives by getting to the free throw line. Michigan doesn't let people get to the free throw line. Minnesota doesn't take any threes. Michigan doesn't allow any threes. I almost look at that as a problem for Michigan because you don't really gain anything by taking that three-point shot away because they're just not really taking it to begin with.
Minnesota's defense sucks. Michigan's offense is struggling.
Yeah, Michigan's offense couldn't score against the second-worst defense in the conference. I mean, that game they scored, what? It was one of their worst games of the year.
It's like 55 or something ridiculous.
59 points on 64 possessions. That's not great. So I don't know if that was really Minnesota doing something special defensively. It was just Michigan shot 45% on twos in that game and 14% on threes. So, again, you have to make some jump shots or you're going to be in a close game against just about anyone.
So Minnesota has lost two home games this year to Maryland and Wisconsin. It's a difficult place to play.
But a place where Michigan usually plays well.
Weird things happen in that building. This was the infamous Saadi Washington technical foul venue. I'm not sure. I'd be curious to see what the environment is like there because, you know, on paper, Minnesota's 17-9 and overall and 7-8 in the league, and I imagine they're still projected in the NCAA tournament as of today.
Yeah, they're. I would say they're on the bubble, but in.
Yeah. So this is a huge game for them. You have a top 10 team on your home court. I imagine the barn will be rocking. My only hesitation on what the atmosphere will be like is the fact that this is one of the most annoying teams to watch. I can't imagine the ups and downs of this fan base. You know, with every loss, they just have to be like, it's trash, burn it down, fire Richard Pitino. But yet, as of mid-February, they are still in the NCAA tournament. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a strange, and it's been this way with Minnesota for a little bit. It's such a strange dynamic of the fans kind of loathing certain elements of this team, but at the same time, here they are. This is a big game. You win this. If they win this game, their next two are Rutgers and Northwestern. And suddenly, you are looking at possibly getting to 20-9 overall and 10-8 in the Big Ten Conference, and you are playing for seeding going into the last two against Purdue and Maryland and the Big Ten Tournament. Like,
yeah,
we don't believe it because it's Minnesota, but on paper, this is what's happening here.
I'd say they probably need to beat at least Michigan or Purdue to really feel good about making the NCAA Tournament and then win at least one of those road games, which they could easily lose at Rutgers or at Northwestern.
Absolutely.
So it's basically a quintessential bubble team, if you ask me. And those teams win. This is the game that puts a bubble team in the NCAA tournament every year.
Yep.
And that used to be Michigan when they were kind of perpetually on the bubble. You would see them win one of these games. It's a trap spot. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of focus on the Michigan State game. I think the fact that maybe these teams have already played will maybe kind of help Michigan take it a little more seriously. They kind of dodged a bullet in the first meeting. I don't know. This would be the best Big Ten team Michigan has beat on the road this year, I believe.
Interesting.
So, I mean, that's the question. Does this kind of – can this travel, right? They've beat Rutgers, Indiana, Illinois, and Northwestern on the road this year.
Yeah, they could use a good home win. Or good road win, for sure. And the interesting thing about Minnesota is you can go win a game against a team that isn't good but still have it count as a good road win.
Ah, the beauty of Richard Pitino basketball.
So the last time I saw them in person, they were basically playing a disinterested effort against Michigan State and getting hammered and then proceeded to lose by one at Nebraska, but then came back and smoked Indiana at home in a game that I thought Indiana was actually going to go out there and and play well, but they're also an enigma. So I don't know what the hell's going on anymore.
We all thought things about Indiana. We don't talk about Indiana anymore. This podcast is banned from Indiana takes.
Okay, pick time. What do you got?
We're going into or for the game or for the rankings?
For the game.
I will take Minnesota by three. No, yeah, Minnesota by three. Why not?
Wow. I'm going to take Michigan because this is still, at the end of the day, John Beilein versus Richard Pitino. And I will give Wolverines by four.
Okay.
All right. Okay, ranking
Let's
time,
get
right?
Let's into the picks.
Okay. You had first pick?
I had first pick.
This will be controversial.
So it shouldn't be controversial. I'm taking Michigan State first with an asterisk. I'm not saying that their future might not look as great, but they had a really good week. They won at Wisconsin when Michigan lost at Penn State. I need to see Michigan win a game on the road, and Michigan State has won on the road against winning teams in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Obviously, the Ward injury affects things. I'm not counting that in my pick. I'm saying it's based on the work that's been done, not the future projection.
Fair. Feel free to slide into his DMs with any counters to that point. With the number two
pick. Well, where do you disagree with that? If you're going to act like it's so controversial.
I guess that's right.
Michigan played its worst game of the year this week.
Lost to Penn State. What has Purdue done? They lose yet?
Purdue lost this week, too.
That's right. They lost at Maryland and didn't look very good doing so. All right. We'll give you the Spartans. That's a fair pick. Number two, I took Michigan. Weird week all the way around from the Beilein ejection to a loss at Penn State to a performance over the weekend that I think in 10-minute segments, you could be like, man, you know, this team's starting to find itself again. And then lo and behold, it looks like the team from the loss to Iowa or the loss to Wisconsin or the loss to Penn State, whatever it may be. They're an up-and-down team, but I think there still has way more upside than downside. The defense is still as sound as it wants to be, and I do think the best thing that could come for Michigan out of that game against Maryland is a reminder that it is defense first. And the second they start thinking otherwise is when they really shoot themselves in the foot.
The scary thing for other teams against Michigan is bad teams make threes. Bad shooting teams make three-point shots sometimes. And Michigan is too good on defense to allow them. Like, they make a couple early threes. It's just kind of a runaway, right? I mean, there are so many open threes in that first half. If any of those, two or three of those go, mm-hmm. all of a sudden they're up 20 at halftime instead of 9. Yeah. So that's where I would settle on Michigan.
So weird where it's like, they've lost to Iowa and Penn State in the last 2 weeks, but in that span they also held Ohio State to 49 and Wisconsin to 52 and Maryland to 52. Like, that team is still when they're at their best.
Yeah, they haven't given up 60 points at home since, I think, the Indiana game or something like that, or the Northwestern game in early January. So over a month since the team scored 60 points at Chrysler.
Sounds like a conversation for the Friday pod, big get into that. Preview edition. Go ahead.
I've got Purdue next. I don't want to completely buy into Purdue, but their schedule doesn't really do anything to sell. So what you can't tell me the game, they have four road games left in the final six. I could see them losing two games at the most.
So have I brought this point up on this pod? I think so. Yeah,
you have. You're that a Purdue hater.
I'm not a Purdue hater. I just feel like everything, and a lot to their credit, everything has gone their way for a very long time this season. And at the end of the day, if you sit there and you say, like, man, you know, I just don't understand why this team is this good, then there's probably some validity to it. And Matt Painter is one hell of a coach. And if anyone has not seen his quote from over the weekend about why Purdue is played so well and how team basketball really works, I urge you to look it up and find it, because he makes great points and it's really why this is an awesome sport. But that said, like, if I just look at a team and say, I don't really think that this team has that much talent, and I think a lot of things have gone their way, I can't imagine that team finishing 17-3 in the Big Ten. And I think there's some bounces are going to go their way. There's going to be a loss or two that is unexpected, and they will find their way to a point of reality.
Did we ever talk about Carson Edwards attempting 27 shots without an assist?
I could talk about that all day. I feel
that's,
like I...
that's an impressive number. Kudos to him. The light is green.
Our all-conference award episode will also be a must-listen, I must say, because I think a half an hour of it might be on what to do with Carson Edwards and Ethan Happ, for that case, for that matter. But
the real question is what to do with Xavier Simpson.
We'll get into it.
Save it for another pod.
I'm at number four, next. And I got Wisconsin. I think that's pretty obvious. Interesting. Is it not?
They lost at home.
They lost to Michigan State back-to-back, and I think everyone would have realized that that was the most likely outcome. Yes, they lost one of them at home and in a game that basically summed up Ethan Happ's entire college career. He scored his 2,000th career point while going 0-for-6 from the free throw line and committing like 6 turnovers or something. But I still think Wisconsin's the fourth best team in this league. And the best news for it is it probably has one of, if not the most favorable schedule to close things out. Illinois tonight, this is Monday, is a dangerous game. I don't understand why, like, Wisconsin's like a 10-point favorite. I'm not sure I get that, but.
Is it in Madison?
Yes.
There you go.
But they have a favorable schedule. I still think it's the fourth best team in the league, so that's where I got there.
I've got Maryland next, and I think you could easily make a case that...
Easily, he says.
Maryland has, for sure, a higher ceiling in the NCAA tournament. I think they're still getting better.
The team
that
I just watched scored 12 points in the second half?
I'm sure Wisconsin's never... No, that was in the...
You're talking about Maryland.
Maryland scored... In the first half, they scored like 18 points, 18, right? Not right the there. First... 18 points in the first half.
Okay, sorry.
They... We're playing against the number two defense in the country. That happens sometimes. A lot of teams can probably complain about that. Maryland has a lot of talent, and I think that they're improving sort of. I wrote the whole preview about them, and I was pretty convinced that they have fixed all their turnover issues. They basically had two bad turnover games in the Big Ten, and they were really good. Mm. And then they just kind of shit the bed in the first half at Chrysler. So that was not impressive.
What about your boy Anthony Cowan in that game?
Not a great look.
No?
Not fun to go against Xavier Simpson. I'll give him that. I mean, it happens. I still would rather take him than Demetri Trice as my point guard.
This is a fair point.
Right? I mean, Bruno Fernando can make his free throws.
Mm-hmm.
I like Maryland, and I think they're still a team that is getting better, and they're also kind of running out of time because they're a little too talented, and I think there will be some NBA attrition there, which makes it tough.
Yep.
When you have the 351st most experienced team in the league and you worry about turning over your roster after the year, it's not a fun spot.
Brutal. Okay, number six, we're going out to Iowa City, and the Hawkeyes, still one of the strangest teams probably in the country at this point in terms of trying to figure out a group, but they're on a four-game winning streak with wins over Michigan, Indiana, Northwestern, and Rutgers on the road. They're just, at this point, just pulling it out of their ass. Come back from 14 down with 4 minutes to go against Northwestern, and then follow it up with a corner, impossible angle, bank three by Bohannon. Just Johnny on the spot at this point. But they keep winning, and they're 9-5 in maybe the best league in the country. So Iowa might be, you know, they're just still kind of sitting there lurking. I'm not sure how good they are in terms of, like, when we get into the NCAA tournament and what the bracket looks like. But, like, you know, they're a couple good matchups away from being a team that, you know, can make some noise in March. We'll see. But as long as they keep winning, you have to give them a degree of respect.
Big one on Tuesday. Big Maryland one. At Iowa. I like yes. that. It's crazy to me that you can be 9-5 in the Big Ten and have the worst defense in the Big Ten. It really defies all logic.
Well, it helps when two of your wins are literally impossible.
That's true. The numbers all say that they're tempting fate a bit, and they might drop a few games down the stretch here, I would say. Who do I have next? I have Illinois next. Illinois is probably playing as well as almost anyone in the league at this point. They have won 5 out of 6 games. They beat Maryland. They beat Michigan State. They won at Ohio State. I mean, they're playing like a top 40 team, I would say, pretty comfortably over the last month. We've said this almost every episode in the podcast, but this team is going to be someone you want to stay far away from in Chicago in a couple weeks. I mean, they're talented, well-coached, and they play a way that's just miserable to play against. And Brad Underwood has done this kind of thing before. I mean, we covered that Michigan-Oklahoma State game, and that team was a mess early in the season, and they turned out to be a really good team. So I wouldn't put a late run past it. I know they're not going to make it as a bubble team or whatever, but why can't they? I mean, what if they keep winning?
Like, what does the committee do if they go 5-1 on the way out and loses in the Big Ten?
They'd have to get to Sunday, I think.
Semis. They'd have to get to the championship game. If they finish out 5-1 and get to the semis and lose to Michigan State.
So they'd be like 18-17 or something like that?
18-17, they'd have 11 wins. I know they don't technically go by conference standings and stuff like that, but they would have 11 wins in perhaps the best conference in the country. I don't know what you would do with them. And here's the thing. It's completely plausible. Their remaining schedule is Wisconsin, Penn State, Purdue, Northwestern, Indiana, Penn State. It's going to be tough, but
those road games at doable. Wisconsin and Purdue.
Absolutely.
If they get one of those, then maybe it's more realistic.
I'm just saying this isn't like under no circumstances could this possibly happen. Like
you're gonna,
it's unlikely.
I'd give look their, back
they,
and
they
say,
have a 10% chance of doing it. But
how did we lose to Florida Atlantic at home?
Totally. Oh. How'd they lose to Georgetown? Like, it was the second game of the year, and their schedule was an abomination with what they were asked to do. Why did, you know, this is still a team that played Ohio State in a neutral court game, essentially, in Chicago. You know, they almost beat Notre Dame. They lost by 2 in that game. They gave Gonzaga a hell of a run in that game in Maui. People forget that. I was having a conversation at Michigan State about that, where that came up. Like, people forget that they were in that game, almost won it. It's a very different resume if they pull that game off. But they've got a strong non-conference schedule. And if they go and win 11 games in the league, I think it's at least a conversation that will happen in the committee room, for sure.
There cannot have ever been an at-large team that won 4 non-conference games.
First time for everything. I don't know. I'm just saying. But like the real point of this conversation is to say that right now they look like an NCAA tournament team.
And they're certainly playing like it.
And it's a shame. Yeah. It's a shame what happened early. Because I know I certainly want to see AO in have every opportunity possible to play on the biggest stage because this is probably his last year of college basketball. And
there's a bigger stage for him out there. I'm just letting you know.
The
biggest stage involves paychecks.
I'm not trying to hear that. But I heard some chatter about Georgie might be looking.
I have not heard that chatter.
That'd be crushing.
He's getting buckets, though.
Oh, by the dozen. All right. I'm up on Minnesota.
Up.
We just talked about Minnesota. I got them at number 8. They are still – this is basically a team that for the Big Ten is probably rooting for a little bit here because in terms of NCAA bids, Ohio State is falling off a cliff, and the last thing the league needs is for Minnesota to follow that – they need this group to find a way into that bracket.
This could be a 6 bid league.
It could be.
It's not impossible.
I would not bet on that, though.
That's fair. I even think Ohio State can still make it. Ohio State is just awful at times offensively. They're my next pick. I guess I should point that out. But I have them at number 9. That second half of the Michigan State game was just – I think that game ended up being their worst performance of the KenPom era. Offensively, I mean, that was just hard to watch. They didn't score for what, like the last 7 minutes or something like that.
Yeah,
they didn't even like. They got like 3 shots in the last 7 minutes. It was
Izzo and Stevens went to that. Right, I shouldn't say Izzo went to that lineup because Dwayne Stevens made the substitution. But they went to a lineup of Foster Lawyer, Matt McQuaid, Kyle Arnes, Kenny Goins, and Thomas Kithier at the 8:40 mark of the game, with it tied 39-39. And I believe Ohio State scored
five
more points the rest of the way. It's incredible.
It's like, and that's not a rare occurrence for them, right? Mm. They've just fallen off a cliff, especially on the road, and they just don't have a guard who they can really trust.
What would Minnesota's record be if it were coached by Chris Holtman?
Oh, he can coach, man. I would have to look at Minnesota's record, but also you're saying we're hyping him up for coaching, and he does drop some great stuff that play at the Indiana game, but they're also last in the Big Ten in turnover rate.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. I'm not going to just buy all that stock.
Fair.
Who do you have next?
Oh, let's see. We are at number 10, Nebraska, which, you know, everyone has already dug the grave, carved the headstone, but the Huskers with two straight wins over Minnesota and Northwestern. They got Penn State this Tuesday. That could be their third straight win. And then they get Purdue at home. And for a Purdue team that's playing for key positioning in the league, I wouldn't want to play this Nebraska team on a three-game winning streak on their home court, right?
Yeah, they...
Because a very astute basketball writer on this podcast once said that Nebraska will win one of those last three games against Michigan, Michigan State, or Purdue, and ultimately mess up the final Big Ten standings. And I'm just... It's just sitting right out there.
That take was really looking grim in late January. It's a little bounce back effort, though. That's nice. I wouldn't pencil in a win at Penn State either, though.
Nor would I.
They
could lose by 10. Oh, get it together.
They could still steal a couple down the stretch. And, I mean, what do they really have to do to be on the bubble? They are like the opposite of Illinois, where they did some good things early in the year, and maybe that pays off.
What do they have to do to be on the bubble? Is that what you just asked? They'd have to beat Penn State, and
12 in the Big Ten. Does that get them in the conversation? I think it does.
They have to finish 4-1.
I think 3-2, they're in the conversation.
3-2 would put them at 8-12 in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
Not happening.
Their computer numbers are good. I don't think they'll win that, but I mean, crazy. Like, it's easier to draw out a path just on like realistic games for Nebraska to make the NCAA tournament than Illinois. Like, we're talking crazy talk earlier.
If Tim Miles gets this team to the NCAA tournament, I am getting a documentary crew and going out there and making a film about this team. I mean, this group was
cooked.
I thought there was a chance he gets fired in February.
When tears flow in February, there's a chance you're getting fired. That's just logic.
Yeah. Okay.
You got
11.
I've got the Scarlet Knights of Rutgers. I mean, there was a guy who was tweeting at us early in the year that we were way too harsh on Rutgers. And he gave a pretty impassioned take. And I feel like he was kind of right. This team is competitive in the league in a way that they really haven't been since they've joined the conference. And they're not even last in efficiency margin. They're not a fun team to play. And I give them credit. They've won two road games this year. I think that's definitely kind of progressing in the right direction out there.
The thing they have going for them is they play their asses off every night, and they're fairly well coached, and they do the little things. They get every loose ball. My big question with Rutgers is just the talent gap, and you know what? Like, can Steve Peichel get a couple top 150 kids in there? I don't know. I wish him the best. He's a good man, good coach, all that stuff. I think it's really impressive that they're 5-10. And
they're going to win a few more games.
I think they're going to, I think they could very well win two or three more games in the league. And it's nice to at least, you can't just have this black hole in the bottom of the Big Ten standings. Like, Rutgers is coming up, and good for them. It's impressive. Here's one. if they can go 3-2 or 4-1 on the way out the door, would you consider a Coach of the Year vote for Steve Peichel?
No.
If they go 4-1 on the way out, and they go 9-11 in the league.
I have a big problem with Coach of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should just go to the coach of the best team in the league.
Okay.
I don't like the narratives that go around it.
Okay.
I think the Coach of the Year is probably the one who recruited the best team, coached the best team, and won the most games. I think it's pretty simple. I don't think you should have this, like the year that Michigan won the league by 3 games, or 2014, I thought it was crazy that Tim Miles shared Coach of the Year just because they made the NCAA tournament. It's just, what's the criteria? Like, because I thought you were going to suck, you did a good job?
I'm just throwing it out there, man.
I'm telling you my take.
You know damn well there will be a lot of writers that are like, Steve Peichel did an amazing job and he's got my vote because Rutgers is an impossible situation. I agree with you. My Big Ten Coach of the Year, if the season ended today, would probably be Matt Painter.
I think that's fair. I think also probably the odds on favorite to win the league right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who do you have next? Number 12.
Ooh, Penn State. Big win over Michigan. And good for Pat Chambers because that thing was off the rails and gone and dead. They've won 2 of their last 4 games, including the win over Northwestern.
So if it was off the rails before, we say it just found like a soft landing spot. Like, it's not getting back on the rails, is it?
I don't think so, no. But it's been interesting. I was talking to someone around the Penn State program, and I didn't realize, like, I thought he got kind of a Band-Aid extension at the end of last year, where it was, like, add a year or two on, you know, for recruiting purposes, one of those deals. But, like, apparently he got, like, an actual new deal. So this is – I'm just kind of watching our backs here. We talked earlier about, like, that it was a foregone conclusion that Chambers wouldn't be back, and I was certainly under that impression. But – I think he might have a different buyout than I was originally under the impression of, and it's not out of the realm of possibility that Pat Chambers is the head coach at Penn State again next year.
He hung a banner last year.
That's right. That's right. Maybe he'll win one this year as Big Ten tournament champions.
Maybe. Crazier things probably haven't happened, but maybe. The last two picks are ugly, and I'm forced to take Indiana here and talk about going off the rails.
Wow.
This thing has just gone to shit. I don't know how. It's not like Indiana, they won some close games, but they were not a team that should lose this many games, even in spite of whatever you say. They're not deep. They don't have what. This is crazy, and it's not a good look for Archie Miller, if you ask me.
January 3rd, they were 12-2 overall, 3-0 in the Big Ten with wins over Louisville, Butler, Marquette.
Penn State on the road, Northwestern.
Yeah. And it is now, like, literally is a mushroom cloud over Bloomington. It's unbelievable. What's their final record? So right now they're 13-12 overall, 4-10 in the Big Ten.
They're only favored in one of their final 6 games per KenPom. So, I say they finish. They win 2 more Big Ten games.
2-4. I agree with that. So that puts them at 15-16 overall and 6-14 in the Big Ten. Total disaster.
I think Archie Miller would rather finish fifth. I mean, they're not making the NIT even, which is crazy.
They would turn down the invite, wouldn't they?
I don't know.
There's a precedent there.
Their one win is in East Lansing. That's probably the craziest part of the whole stretch.
Right. Right. On a game that they lost Javon Morgan in the first half.
Man, what are you going to do? That's tough times on Archie Island.
Ouch.
And they're not even the last place team in our power rankings.
Our friends in Evanston, Northwestern, I mean, just when you think they can't find different ways to lose, they still continue to do so. Just a ridiculous stretch of bad losses versus bad luck. Last week was a 50 points they scored in a conference game in a loss to Nebraska on the road. I don't see it getting any better. They are at Ohio State this week in a game Ohio State absolutely has to win. And, yeah, I mean, I don't think we have to talk about Northwestern. Who cares?
Two best players graduate this year. And another starter.
There's our sound effects for the
screen. Well, yikes. Talk about going off the rails.
Shit gets crazy in the hallway, man. All right. Well, we didn't make people listen to the pitch beforehand, which was very nice of us. But read and subscribe to umhoops.com. The finest analytics that you'll find this side of the Mississippi. I don't know what's going on over there, but
they could use some new ones out there on the West Coast. Hoops is lacking out there.
And grab a free trial to theathletic.com and read my oral history on 3 minutes of basketball that time will never forget. What do you think of my theory on that, by the way? Did you happen to read it?
It's okay. I've not read it yet.
So I came up with the theory. So that ridiculous lineup that Izzo played, right, outscored Ohio State 11-3, won the game. It won the game in that 3 minute stretch. It was a tie game. They outscored them 11-3. Michigan State went on to win handily. But it changed the game.
What's your theory?
If Michigan State goes on and wins at least a share of the Big Ten championship, and Ohio State, which was in that game, and if they had won it, would have secured their NCAA tournament bid without a doubt. If they don't hear their name called on Selection Sunday, you could say that those 3 minutes ended up determining that Michigan State got its share of the Big Ten championship and held Ohio State out of the NCAA tournament. And those 3 minutes featured Foster Lawyer, Matt McQuaid, Kyle Arnes, Kenny Goins, and Thomas Kithier.
There's about another 2,000 possessions in the season that probably had a lot bigger impact on that.
I thought it was a fun take.
I mean, you should tell Bielan that he'll like that with every possession matters. Those five possessions are key. But so are all the other ones.